Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up?
All the leaves on the trees
to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba always with me. You know, I have bringing a very special guest today, Xander, my boy. What's up, Xander?
Not much. I'm always honored to be on the show. I'm always considered a special guest, so it's always good to be on. We're usually used to doing Sporting Edge, the sports show together, but it's cool to be on the Bubba Show. Discussing some cool things.
Yeah, of course. Well, the first thing we have to discuss on Monday, the Cubs traded for Aroldis Chapman, and I hate the trade. What do you think?
I wasn't a big fan of the trade. I think Chapman's a great player and a great talent. I mean, obviously, you know, the hardest thrower in the league is a great player, but I'm just not sure if he really fits in with the Cubs' MO and the chemistry. I mean, if you remember a couple years ago, the Reds and the Cubs really got into it. Chapman threw at Nate Sheerholtz, and there was a big argument with Rizzo and Chapman from the dugout. Not to say that really matters anymore, but you know, I think the Cubs are a special group of players. They're a bunch of young guys, seem very tightly knit, and you know, I think they did give up quite a bit for Chapman, and not necessarily guys who are ever going to start in the major league team. And I think that goes along with the genius of Theo Epstein. I mean, he's done a lot of great things so far as the Cub GM, so I have to put my faith in him. But personally, I wasn't the biggest fan of the move. I would have much rather gotten Andrew Miller from the Yankees. I think he's a better pitcher. He obviously doesn't throw as hard, but you know, Chapman is a great player and has proven that throughout his career. I mean, he has a career 2.1 ERA. Strikes out a lot of guys, so I'm hoping this works out. But, I mean, this is really the Cubs going all in here.
As Cubs fans, we both hope it works out. I didn't like it either. I thought they gave up way too much, and I would have much rather seen Miller. I think they gave up too much for a 2-month rental player. But more importantly, back to real business, and of course, the markets continue to vacillate. Although you know they were under a little bit of pressure, but of course, you've got the Fed coming out with announcements. But I think a bigger story is what's going on in the Democratic National Committee and all that information. I know you've looked at some of that stuff. What did you think of what's going on with all that crap?
I mean, I think it's a really big story. I mean, you see that WikiLeaks came out with, you know, it says like 20,000 emails of, you know, the DNC and what they've been doing kind of behind Bernie Sanders' back. And I think this is a very big deal. I mean, not only for you know, just the Democratic Party, but just kind of the whole system in general. It's really kind of scary when you think about, you know, how the most powerful people, there's stuff going on that we'll never really get to know. Perhaps it'd be for an organization like WikiLeaks. I mean, we would have never found out, you know, kind of the backstabbing and the rigged process going on against Bernie Sanders if it weren't for this organization. And you know, not to say that I'm a Hillary or Bernie fan, but I mean, I feel a little bad for the guy. He did call them out on this, you know, months ago and was backlashed for it. So this is a big deal. I think a lot of mistrust going on. And I was just, you know, not really surprised, but I mean, it is a little bit shocking to see this widespread, I guess you could say, collusion or corruption going on within the party or any party for that matter. It doesn't really matter, Republican or Democrat, but you know, it's pretty cool. I think that Bernie Sanders called them on their hand a while ago, and now it's being proven that, you know, he was right.
Well, I think it's a big deal. I think this ties back into, you know, Hillary Clinton not getting in trouble for the email server issue herself. I think it goes into the entire thing of and you said it yourself, and I believe both parties are screwed up. I'm not going to pick one side or the other. I mean, basically, you guys know where I stand with my personal opinions. But as far as the crookedness and the nasty things that go on behind closed doors, I think both parties are at fault. But I do believe that it's ironic that Trump has been calling it a rigged system for quite a while. And, of course, we are finding out that it is indeed a rigged system with these delegates and the entire process. And I found it surprising that Hillary didn't take a bigger hit among the voters. How about you? Were you surprised at that?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised. I mean, you look at her numbers and a lot of websites, she's still a pretty big favorite to win this election. But I think one of the big factors that's going to come out the next couple weeks is to see whether she had any personal involvement with these emails and with the committee. You know, nothing's really been said about that yet. You know, basically just, you know, possible things about her campaign and some funding issues with the DNC, but nothing has really tied her directly to this. But, you know, like I said, with her history, I wouldn't be surprised if there was some personal involvement here. But I mean, the whole thing in general, it reeks of collusion, and it's just, I think it's bad just for politics in general. I mean, I feel like, you know, I'm a young person, but notoriously my career of following politics is it's a lot of, you know, back end, it's a lot of, you know, corrupt kind of dealings that, you know, just kind of make you lose a little faith in what this country was built on.
Well, a lot of guys your age, a lot of kids your age, you know, just graduating college and are, you know, very interested in, like, the Bernie Sanders message, the more socialist, not capitalistic view of life. What is your stance on whether or not do you like Bernie's message? Did you understand it at all? Were you part of it? Or what do you think about the type of message that he's sending and about all these freebies that they want to give away?
You know, I don't really like the message that much. I respect the guy a lot. I think he's done a lot, you know, in terms of his own movement. It's been cool to watch. I mean, you know, basically, I wouldn't really say a formal Democrat in terms. I'm more of a socialist, but I feel like that's, I guess, more the Democratic Party. But, you know, just in general about the message, you know, I grew up, you know, in high school. I took an economics class. It was the first class I ever really loved and really learned about how the economy works from a free market perspective. That was kind of the first thing I learned about. So I was already a little biased, I think, going into college, just being more of a, you know, a smaller government, free market kind of person, just because that's what I learned. I really fell in love with economics. So I was never really a big fan of the Bernie Sanders message. I think that's one of the great things about the country that we live in, is that you can basically come up from anything and make as much money as you want, you know, without any repercussions. So I thought that it was a great thing about the country that I live in, that basically anybody can come up and do that. And the Bernie Sanders message to me didn't really resonate, because, you know, I don't really agree with the whole, the free college, the entitlements and all that. And not to say that there, you know, I don't agree with a little bit of it, but his whole message of, you know, basically, you know, respreading wealth throughout everywhere, I think it kind of takes away from the greatness of, you know, what our country was founded on. And basically you can have a great idea, build it up as big as you want, make as much money as you want, but that's more my view from a free market perspective. That's just more of what I believe in, you know, in terms of what makes an economy really work. But, I mean, you could say what's going on right now isn't really working for anybody. But, yeah, I was never really a big Bernie Sanders guy, even though I did respect, you know, what he was trying to do.
Well, of course, and you were probably a little biased from who you grew up with. But, you know, I mean, it always does make a lot of sense that you would, you know, your neighborhood and everything you stand for. Of course, even in our neighborhood, there are a lot of the Bernie type socialists, and of course, Chicago itself is more of a Democratic socialist area again. So you are a little bit of the anomaly for the area that we live in, but I can understand it. And of course, I'm obviously way against socialism. I don't think that they should have the right to tax. And if I remember correctly, the Revolutionary War was built on overtax. But, you know, hey, we're going to come back with more from Xander. He's going to educate us on economics and how the world works, and we'll talk a little free markets and price discovery and what that all means. But in the meantime, if you ever miss an episode of The Bubba Show or The Sporting Edge, all you got to do is go to LibertyTalk.fm and download them. You can be one of the over 240,000 people that are downloading our show now. In the meantime, we also have a full lineup of program there as well. So go to LibertyTalk.fm and check it out. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I am visiting today with Xander. We'll be back after the break with more of The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, The Bubba Show. We'll be right back. Todd Bubba Horowitz and Xander bringing into the world of young economics. And So, Xander, you talked about this in the first part of the show, and you talked about your first favorite class, which was economics, and I remember your teacher, and of course, that taught a lot about free markets and price discovery. And I contend that today there is not that much. We don't have the same type of free market and price discovery that was meant to be that you probably learned in your economics class. What are you noticing? What are you seeing? And what do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there definitely isn't as much of that. I mean, the first thing you learn about as an economics student is from the free market perspective because, you know, to know how a market works with government regulation, you know, price floors, price ceilings, you talk about minimum wage and things like that, you need to know how a market works without those things. I mean, the first model you ever learn is a supply and demand model that work, you know, independently of each other. And, you know, then you work in, you know, what a minimum wage looks like on a graph and what that does, you know, in terms of, you know, whether there's a shortage of employment, whether there is too much employment. And, you know, right now in today's world, and it seems to me like it's leaning more towards a lot more government regulation, a lot more, and not necessarily regulation, but government being very involved in the market. And that's what I really don't like. I feel like markets, you know, are meant to basically be left alone because they'll always find their own equilibrium. I mean, that's a very book-oriented theory, but I do think it holds a lot of value. I mean, obviously the government is there to kind of watch over people, keep people safe, and I think a little bit of government is necessary. I mean, we're running, you know, arguably the biggest country in the world. I think you definitely need an overarching body, but it seems to me that, you know, throughout these last few years, and it looks towards our future, that the government is just way too involved in the economy, and I think that's where you see a lot of inefficiencies, and whether that comes to labor, you know, other parts of the market. I think we're going down a slope that I think is going to lead to even more inefficient markets and just an inefficient economy. And I think right now you look at the economy, there's a million different ways to interpret things. I mean, you have obviously a big political agenda. No matter what news program you watch, you know, jobs report, there's always, you know, two different ways to look at the same number. But, you know, right now for me, my view of the economy, I see a stock market that is very high, but not necessarily for the right reasons. And obviously a lot of what I hear and a lot of what I know comes from the man who runs this show. But, you know, for my own take on it, you know, it seems to me that, you know, we've got a little bit too much involvement from the government. And I think that's causing, you know, quite a bit of inefficiency. And I think the perfect example is the stock market. To me, you know, this is my own individual opinion. To me, it doesn't seem like it should be as high as it is because our economy really isn't functioning at that level. But, I mean, the tape never lies.
Well, and that's correct. But I think the more important thing you said, and this is where I get on, is markets are very efficient when they're left to their own being. They will price themselves out correctly because true price discovery, and we talked about this to open the show. A body was traded, and it took four bodies of the Cubs to get one Aroldis Chapman from the Yankees, and that was the price discovery model working at its best. So they defined the value of what he was worth to them, and to them he was worth four bodies, and so both parties agree, and the exchange of wealth took place, Aroldis Chapman going to the Cubs and four prospects going to the Yankees. And I believe that left to their own devices without the Federal Reserve, without the government, without anybody, that prices will find a level because at some point there's going to be a buyer come in and buy and where selling is willing to sell. And until we get back to that type of model and we have this manipulation from the government and from the Federal Reserve and from others, it's going to be much more challenging and it's going to continue to sink and slow down the economy. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, and I think a perfect example in today's economy, you know, just for me looking at jobs and not talking about the number, you know, how many were created on the topic. You know, it seems to me like a lot more people are leaning towards, you know, part-time jobs and low-wage jobs as a means of supporting an entire family. And, you know, I think that's where you see my major inefficiency with, you know, basically the U.S. economy right now is the jobs that we have. We're not creating enough good jobs. And, you know, like, that's why there's a big argument on the minimum wage, I think, is, you know, is $8.25 enough? you know, support an entire family? I really don't think so. But that's just the way we're working right now. Is a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people out there that can, you know, that are basically looking for only minimum wage jobs. And that's where you see a lot of inefficiencies and a lot of separation of the classes. I mean, you know, Bub says this all the time, but the middle class is slowly, I think, being dragged into two classes. And when you see a two-class society, I think is, you know, probably the worst thing that can happen here.
No, I agree 100%. I mean, again, it's a bad deal. And again, this is where I come in and say, look, you didn't get a job for a minimum wage job for your career. Minimum wage jobs, the first reason there was a minimum wage was because women and children were being taken advantage of. So they had to establish a fair wage instead of slave labor. Now, these jobs are really designed for high school and college kids that come home that need a summer job or a part-time job to help their families. These jobs were not designed for the average American to make a living off of. These were even if somebody wanted to do them for extra income. But you don't go in your life looking to work at McDonald's for $8.25 an hour and continue to be on the order counter. If you go to McDonald's, you're looking to move up the company ladder. And that's where I think a lot of the problems have come, is we've lost a lot of the desire because of all the entitlements that are given out now. We've lost a lot of the drive to move up through a company. So you start at $8.25 at McDonald's and you get a raise to 10 and you get into assistant manager, maybe get 14. And so on, and you work your way into the corporate structure of McDonald's or running your own store for more money. And I think that is where a lot of this is being lost. What are your thoughts?
I think a major problem, you know, in our economy today is that you see these jobs that I think, you know, back, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, you know, a perfect example is I took an economics class my freshman year of college, and my teacher gave an example about, you know, when he was, you know, in the summers of trying to pay for his college tuition, he worked at a fish plant. You know, he moved fish around basically at a packing plant, and he made, I don't know what the number was, it was $2 or $3 an hour, but at the time it equated to, you know, about 16 or 17 in today's economy. And I think, you know, one of the problems you see today is, I mean, the minimum wage now is, you know, what, about $8, but really it's not worth as much as it was 30 or 40 years ago. And a lot of these jobs that people used to be able to do, you know, in the working industry, you know, blue-collar workers, the jobs just aren't really there anymore like they used to be, and people aren't making as much as they used to be. And that's where the minimum wage now, there's a big argument that, you know, is it really enough to live? I mean, I think for a lot of people it isn't. I mean, maybe you're living by yourself, fine, but I mean, a lot of people are using these jobs trying to support an entire family, and I think that's why you do have a huge debate on, you know, should the minimum wage be $15 an hour? Should it be this? Should it be that? And then the other side of that coin is that efficient for the economy? And the answer is probably not. But the answer, you know, when you're looking at a real economy, you're dealing with real people, and sometimes, you know, the inefficiencies have to be set aside, you know, to help people. So, I mean, that's where there's a huge discrepancy. And, you know, what should be, what shouldn't be. But basically, you take a look at, you know, people working for minimum wage, and the value of that wage has really been decreasing, you know, for a long time. And that's where you see a lot of problems with people trying to, you know, live their lives on this kind of wage.
Well, and that's one of the problems you have when you have an idiotic Fed that says that there's no inflation, but you just explained it very clearly, that the same money of years ago does not equate to today, which means that your cost of goods and services continue to rise even though your wages have not. And that is a true sign of inflation. I don't care what they say. I don't care how an economist or Janet Yellen or any of the other ignoramuses that run these groups want to figure it. It's quite simple. Okay, the wages have not kept up with the inflation. No matter what our inflation is, we have not kept up, and that becomes the much bigger problem, which can create the revolutionary type of environment, which we're starting to see peak its ugly head right now. We're going to step out here for a break. I am hanging out with my boy, Xander. We're talking a little bit of the economy. We're talking a little bit about markets. And, excuse me, we're going to continue going in this path. But when you miss an episode, you got to go to libertytalk.fm to get the Bubba Show and the Sporting Edge, as well as we've got also 24-hour programming there. So you can get yourself involved and see kind of what you do. But in the meantime, this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horse. I'm going to step out here for a break, and I'm going to come back with more from Xander. After the break, The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We will be right back after the break.
trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Todd Bob Horace with Xander, and we're talking a little bit of the economy, we're talking a little bit about work, a little bit of minimum wage, a little bit about baseball trades, but really it all came back down to price discovery. And Xander, you know, I know you're working this summer, and you know, you work at school as well, but you know, in the summer, you got, your jobs are just a little bit better, and you've got an interesting summer going. You've got, you know, a couple of different careers going on, all related into the same field, which is the financial field. But you're doing different things, and you make a pretty good wage at your jobs, and you make much more than the minimum wage. Let me make it clear. But, you know, you're out. You go hang with your buddies. You go downtown, and you have a couple of beers. You go after a game, you have a couple of beers. You guys go, you know, do a lot of things. You play golf. And I'm going to venture to say that with as much money as you're making, it's still kind of hard to put any dough away, even though you really have no real expenses, but yet you're making 2.5 times the minimum wage. What do you say?
Yeah, you know, the thought of putting money away rarely crosses my mind. I mean, because, you know, like you said, I am making more than minimum wage by quite a bit, but, you know, even doing stuff every few days, you know, going out, playing around the golf, you know, $40-$50, it doesn't seem like much, but it kind of is. And the thought of, you know, saving money, to me as a young person, maybe that's just the way my generation works, but doesn't really cross my mind too often. And, you know, when it does cross my mind, I think about, you know, is this gonna set me back for a couple beers in the next 2 weeks? Maybe I shouldn't save. Maybe I should wait and spend it on those things. But yeah, you know, the thought of saving to me is almost non-existent right now, and maybe it shouldn't be. Maybe I should be thinking about saving, but honestly, I really haven't done much of that.
Yeah, but you have to save for your, you know, obviously, as you know, I fund your education, but I don't fund the rest of your activities while you're down there. And you do put away money, and at least you have until this year being your senior year, but you have put away money every year, you know, the last through the we'll call it the party season. But what are you going to do this year if you're not putting any dough away? But don't you find it harder to save because the things you enjoy to do are all very expensive?
Well, you know what? I thought we were talking more saving, you know, long term, like starting, you know, getting money involved in a mutual fund. But yeah, I do find ways to save for the next upcoming year. But you know, past that, past what I'm going to need until next May, I guess, when I'm done with school. I mean, that's basically what I plan out for. So, you know, the thought of saving, you know, 15 or 20% of what I make this summer for, you know, long term, when I'm talking, you know, possibly for retirement, that's the kind of stuff that doesn't really cross my mind. The things I save are more for, you know, what's going to get me through the next 9 months of school when I need to, you know, go out to eat every couple days, you know, buy food from the grocery store, buy a couple beers, you know, but just buy things in general that I'm going to need that aren't going to be funded by mom and dad's paycheck. So yeah, past this school year, I mean, the thought of long term saving it just doesn't really come up too much. But, yeah, I do find a way to save for the school year because I know that, you know, working 5 hours a week in the econ lab for $35 or $40 probably isn't going to get me through too much.
Yeah, and that's for sure. And, of course, you're still on the company payroll at home, so you don't have those you don't have rent, and you don't have to buy a lot of your own things. You know, we only request that you pay for your own party hardy stuff. And, you know, I mean, I bought you one handle when you got in, but that's it for you. But, you know, again, and I'm not saying you should start saving, but it is never too early to start putting away, you know, $20 a month. Into some sort of a fund that will continue to buy stock, because you'll realize that when you get to the finish line, and hopefully for you the finish line will be, you know, when you're near 50, where you'll have the opportunity to decide if you want to continue working or you want to take it a little bit easier. And that's one of the big mistakes that many of us make, is we don't prepare for that future. And all of a sudden, before you know it, the future comes in front of you, because I think you've even noticed this, how much faster time moves now versus when you were a much younger kid.
I mean, it moves almost infinitely faster. You know, I feel like, and people hear this all the time, but I literally feel like I was walking, sitting on my freshman dorm room, you know, a couple months ago. I mean, I think back, it goes that fast. And now I'm going into my senior year, you know, basically with one more year left until I have to go out, get a job, you know, basically start living a real life. And it's crazy how fast time goes. But I think that's just part of, you know, just being a person, human nature in general. I mean, it's always hard to look, you know, that far ahead. I mean, that's why, you know, for example, you know, staying on a diet, set on a workout plan, it's always tough to take things, you know, day by day, because, you know, sometimes you see a long-term goal and it's just, sometimes it's, you don't really think about it. I mean, retirement for me right now isn't even really a thought. You know, I'm not even thinking about early tomorrow. I'm thinking about, you know, a playoff baseball game tonight. So the thought of 35, 40 years down the road from now is, I mean, maybe it comes up once every few weeks if somebody mentions it to me. But, I mean, I think that's just part of human nature. It's always tough to look that far ahead, even though you probably should.
Well, that's, of course, the right answer, which is why that you look at a very small amount, so you give up, you know, one beer a week, and that one beer a week turns into a few hundred thousand dollars when you're older, and you'll never miss the one beer. And besides, you know, listen, you have that one that's after, when you've already had too many, and then you have that, you can eliminate that one more at the end of the night. But I get it all, and listen, I've lived the entire experience, and I've been through it all. But, you know, you're seeing, and even in your life, you've seen the economic change even around the neighborhood that we live in, and you've seen a lot of change in a lot of the people you know. What are some of the things you've noticed?
One of the main things, I mean, college, I think, is something that over the past, I'd say, 7 to 8 years has become a lot more expensive. You know, I think college is always kind of expensive. I mean, not talking about 30 or 40 years ago, but, you know, I'd say past this millennium, it's not easy to send somebody to college, whether you're paying it by yourself, getting loans, you know, whether your parents pay for you. I mean, it is a lot of money, and, you know, these days to get an education, I mean, you got to think it's, you know, almost $150,000, and that's a lot of the movement and a lot of things I've heard, you know, in the next couple of years, some people are thinking, you know, is it worth it, you know, to get that four-year degree and then maybe go to graduate school, get degrees after that? I mean, I think it's a question that a lot of people face nowadays. I mean, you hear about student loans. I mean, in some kids, they're trapped in debt till, you know, you're 40, 45 years old. I mean, that's a lot to take on as a young person, you know, starting your career with so much debt. And, you know, but times are different these days. I mean, you don't really see too many people going straight into the workforce, you know, after high school, because, I mean, the theme of the day now is that you need an education. You need a degree if you want to move up in the world. Because, you know, the jobs of yesteryear, you know, you don't really see too many people going out, like my economics teacher getting a job at a fish plant for the first couple of years, during college and after college, making enough money to live. You don't really see that as much anymore today, and I think that's because it's a lot harder to make a good living that way. So, I mean, I'd say that's the main thing I've noticed is, you know, kind of the talk about college, and we're getting to that point again where now it's like, is college too expensive? Is it worth it, but is it going to be, you know, worth it financially for me to go and get this degree because it's going to set me back, you know, for a very long time. But at the same time, I'm going to be set back if I don't go. So it's kind of a catch-22 in that sense.
Well, but I guess the bigger question is, and this you could graph on an economics chart, is are you really set back? I mean, you've got a buddy of yours that's going to welding school, okay, and his job will – the job he'll end up with will end up netting him probably the equivalent of $150,000 a year, okay, with pension and benefits and everything else. So is that, you know, a job, you know, and is that a good deal? Now, again, one of the bigger differences is that if you don't go to college, you're almost certain to have to be doing some sort of manual labor. But, of course, you know, manual labor is, you know, contractors and things like that, they make a lot of money as well. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's definitely a great point. There is a lot of manual labor jobs out there that you can make a lot of money on. You know, one of the things for me is, and not that I've experienced a hard life of manual labor. I mean, I did work on a golf course for a summer, so that was pretty tough, being in the heat, waking up at 4 a.m. But I mean, just you look at manual labor, and you know, I guess sitting in essence behind a desk. You can look at the health effects a little bit. I mean, you know, being a laborer, a blue-collar laborer your whole life, it definitely takes a toll on your body. You know, I've got some friends and some friends' dads who I've seen it worked in those kind of fields for their entire life, and, you know, it's definitely hard, you know, moving and working with your body the entire day for that long of a period. But you can definitely get a head start, you know, compared to people who do choose to go to a four-year education or an eight-year education. You could definitely get a head start, and I guess you look at the effects of, you know, how much on average are those people graduating with degrees making after, and at what point does that get made up? Does it get made up? I haven't done any research on it, but I'd have to say right now that it's more valuable, I think, to get at least a four-year degree and go to school. I think you'll eventually make that money up, but, I mean, it's up for debate. I mean, the cost of school, it keeps on going up. And it's gone up, I think, you know, every year. And now we're getting to the point where I think it'd be interesting to do another study, maybe in the next 5 years, you know, if getting that degree is worth it compared to, you know, doing something like being a pipe fitter, being a welder or something like that.
Well, we're going to do the study in 3 minutes because we're gonna put a pencil to paper and figure it out and see how it works out. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz hanging out with Xander today. And, of course, you know, when you miss an episode, LibertyTalk.fm gets you not only the Bubba Show, but the Sporting Edge as well. And I encourage you to check it out, as well as checking out BubbaTrading.com. You know, we offer a lot of great, unique programs, as well as content every day. But we do teach you how to hedge the portfolio. We teach you how to protect, so when the markets do come down, you'll be ready to go. But we're going to step out here for a break, and we're going to come back and figure out the economics of the money. When we come back from the break with more from Xander, this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. We will be back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz hanging out with my boy Xander and talking a little economics now. So Xander, now let's look at these numbers, okay? We've got an 18-year-old kid goes to work, makes, let's say, we'll start at 100, but let's say he gets to 150,000 total, and that's including benefits, health care, and pension, all that, coming back to the end of his career. So he makes, let's say, $500,000 between the time of 18 and 22, whereas you, between 18 and 22, spent $250,000. So at age 22, he's got a $650,000 head start on you. Now, he'll continue to make his $150,000 and, you know, get, you know, cost of living increases. And, you know, so we'll stick him at, you know, $150,000 and up a little bit. And let's say you get a great job out of college, and let's say that great job starts you at $100,000, okay? I don't think you'll get that kind of job. There are a few available, but let's say it's $100,000. So now, at what age do you break even on that job? And I look at it and I go, okay, so he makes $150,000. Okay, so he's $150,000 for the next 8 years. So that's $1.2 million and the $500,000. So he's $1.7 million. You're at $800,000 minus $250,000. So you're only at $550,000 versus $1.7 million. What do you think?
Well, I mean, that's a great example and all, but if that was so true, I mean, wouldn't we see everybody going to welding school or going to pipe fitting school and doing all that? I mean, Now, that example, you know, I think that's why you can't only look at things with such a small sample size, because that example is great, you know, in terms of if you're looking at the other side of the benefits of not going to school. But, I mean, obviously it doesn't work out for everybody that way, or there wouldn't be such a strong emphasis on going to school and getting a degree.
Well, I mean, you know, part of it is today is that the lack of those type of jobs does not exist. The problem today is that a lot of the manual laborers are not around. The problem with today is that we've all been taught, and I'm not saying that school is bad. I mean, I'm happy that you went to school, and I'm happy your sister goes to school, and I don't have a problem with going to school. But one of the things I learned, and I learned this actually in sports, was when guys go on strike and they hold out for a year, they never can make back the money that they gave up holding out for the year. So you have to be just very careful. It's a very fine line for the overall success rate of what you can generate versus what your cost is. Now, again, I am a big fan of education, and again, I wish I would have gone. I did not. But at the end of the day, does it really matter, and does it make that much of a difference? And I would say in the big bulk, if we looked at this as a bell-shaped curve, I would say for a big bulk of people, it probably doesn't make a hell of a lot of difference. What do you say?
God, it's really hard to judge without any numbers. But, you know, I would have to say getting a degree, I think, in the past 15 years has been worth it. You know, obviously it's tougher for some people than others when you talk about, you know, whether you have to pay for school by yourself or whether you get help, you get funding from your parents. But just like we talked about before with, you know, the McDonald's corporate pay structure, you know, you go in, you work as a cashier, you work your way up to assistant manager, maybe you work your way into the in the actual corporate sector. And I think a similar thing could be said about somebody who comes out of school with a job. I mean, maybe, you know, I mean, then this is year, maybe you come out of school, you're making 50 or 60, but I think the goal and basically everybody's working life is to move up the ladder so that maybe that 50 or 60, when you come out of school, you get into a sort of position where maybe you're making 250 to 300. I mean, I think that's basically the whole point of working somewhere. I mean, you try to move up the ladder and do everything that you can, and eventually that leads to more benefits and more pay. So I would say right now, even with the pretty high cost of school, you know, I think it's still worth it to get a degree, and I think you can live a great lifestyle if, you know, you do get into some manual labor, but I think it's definitely not the same as it used to be when you were growing up, when you could, you know, go straight out of high school and do a lot of the same things. But I think a major difference in today's world is the, you know, the up-and-coming use of technology. I mean, technology is obviously already here, but, I mean, every day more and more technology is becoming a bigger part of our lives. And I think, you know, the people who aren't able to adapt with the times, I mean, they're the ones who are going to slowly fall behind. And I think that's what you see sometimes. And even in elementary school now, I mean, and they're teaching more programming, more coding. And that's something I wish that I had gotten into a little more. I mean, I know there's a lot of kids from my high school who've gotten into computers. But, yeah, I mean, if you don't really know how to work a computer in today's times, you know, you could be left behind.
Well, no, I understand. Like I said, I'm not arguing the fact. I agree, but I'm saying that, you know, depending on what you're going to do, I mean, even if you're going to be an entrepreneur and try to open a business by yourself, are you better off taking the amount that you had to finance for college, or are you better off trying to open that business right away with that money? You know, it's funny because last time you were on air, I said, what do you want to do? And you said, you want to be a poker player. And I said, I wasted $250,000 for that. And I said, why wouldn't you take the 250 and just go be a poker player first? So what's your overall thought process of if you have the desire to be independent and maybe not educator related of taking the money and either putting it into a business or putting it somewhere else? What do you think about that?
Okay. Well, I mean, last time my you know, ideal situation would maybe be a professional poker player. But, I mean, obviously I don't think it's very realistic for myself right now. I mean, that, you know, Not really a lot of job security there, so I'm glad that I took, you know, these 4 years and these $250,000, put them towards an education, because I think that'll be more worth it in the short run getting out of school for me. You know, I mean, the stories about, you know, being a poker player, you know, kind of take going out on the limb doing stuff like that out of school works for very few people. And but, you know, kind of getting back on point a little more, I mean, you know, being an entrepreneur, coming out of school, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends what field you're trying to get into. I mean, there's a lot of valuable things you can learn in school, but I mean, at the same time, there's other sorts of businesses. And maybe there's a lot of stuff that you could learn on your own. And I think an interesting thing from my perspective, I think a lot of what I've learned in college has been great, but I think almost as valuable to me has been not really living by myself, living on my own, but it's kind of a step between, you know, being a kid and being in the real world. I think I found a lot of value in that, you know, kind of living, you know, not with my parents, you know, kind of not really by myself, but kind of more or less on my own a little bit. And I think along with that, you know, taking classes, it's kind of a little bit of a job, in the sense that, you know, nobody's there to wake you up for school in the morning and tell you that you're not going to miss the bus or anything. It's kind of on you to do that. And I think, you know, one of the more valuable lessons I've learned, you know, being at college is just kind of learning how to operate more independently. And I think that'll serve me well, going forward. But, you know, at the same time, like you said, if you started a business by yourself at 18, you learn to operate independently just as quick. So, you know, it's a very opinionated question, and, you know, you'll get a lot of different opinions on it.
No, I agree 100%. I mean, I think that again, I'm a big fan, and I think that you should go to school. But I'm playing the devil's advocate because I do know the cost. And of course, you know, I know a lot of doctors that are still paying off their debts from school because the costs have escalated, which is one of the things that needs to be rectified in this country. But of course, we've got too many other issues dealing with this economy, and that's the artificial inflation, which we kind of talked about, you know, from the beginning. Now, we've got about 30 seconds left for you. You got any last thoughts for the listeners out there about your experience or what we should be doing, or what do you think?
Well, I'd say my main point is that, you know, I think, you know, going to school is great. I think that's something that, you know, people should strive to do. I think it's an accomplishment, but, you know, at the same time, you got to look at, everybody's got their own individual situations. You got to look what's best. You got to look at what's best for you. I mean, I've got some friends, a lot of friends who've gone to school, and I've got a few friends who haven't, and they've all made those decisions, you know, not based on looking at what everybody else is doing, but they've made it looking at their own selves. You know, I mean, one of my very good friends, you know, went to school for a year, and decided it really wasn't for him, and he's done a lot of work to get back and you know, getting a job and doing something to move his life forward. So I give him a lot of props for that. And, you know, basically do what's best for yourself.
And that's it. That's the words according to Xander. And it's Xander, it's great to have you on, as always. And I got to get you on Bubba's Bottom Line as well. But great to have you here, as always. This is The Bubba Show. Todd, Bubba Horowitz. And, of course, when you miss an episode, LibertyTalk.fm will get you the download as well as the Sporting Edge. That'll do it for today. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show. Todd, Bubba Horowitz. Everybody have a great day. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you tomorrow. The Bubba Show.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.